Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Nelson Araujo, VP of Community Affairs and Partnerships at R&R Partners, and Emma Rose Terry, Chair of the Employee Board for the R&R Foundation. R&R Foundation, the charitable arm of R&R Partners, is inviting Nevada youth to submit public service announcement ideas to their Young Visionaries PSA contest with the chance to see winning entries get professionally produced. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
We're looking forward to the conversation.
So, Emma Rose, what does the R&R Foundation do?
So the R&R Partners Foundation is dedicated to empowering our employees to transform lives and strengthen the communities in which we live and do business. And we believe that great ideas can come from sheltering the homeless to educating the uneducated, feeding the starving, franchising the disenfranchised, and giving a voice to the voiceless. We are a catalyst to equip the next generation and generations to come with opportunity. The foundation really focuses on 5 areas, all voted on by our employees, that include children and families, arts and education, diversity and inclusion, and public safety and human rights.
Nice. Okay. Now, Nelson, what inspired you to launch the Young Visionaries PSA contest for youth in Nevada?
Well, Heather, this year R&R is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and we wanted to use this opportunity to challenge our youth to share with us some of the most pressing needs that they are facing in this day and time. And we wanted to make sure that all of our worlds collided with this competition and bring in the strengths from our youth, our team at R&R, and also provide a nonprofit a unique opportunity to be a part of this effort.
Okay, now for those who aren't familiar with what R&R Partners is, what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
R&R Partners is a leading agency across the United States that focuses on PR, advertisement, marketing, and so much more. We are celebrating our 50th anniversary this year and are looking forward to continued engagement from Nevada all the way through to the states that we operate in.
Awesome. Okay. Now, what are the criteria to enter the Young Visionaries PSA contest?
The criteria is simple. We are asking Nevada youth ages 14 to 18 to partner with a nonprofit, visit our website, that's youngvisionaries.rrpartners.com, and submit their idea. Once they submit their idea, all they have to do is wait for judges to select a winner, and the winning entry receives complete package, including $20,000 that goes to a designated nonprofit, as well as the full production and partnership with R&R Partners to have their PSA placed.
Okay. Now, when you say they should submit their idea, sometimes that can sound pretty overwhelming. So what types of issues are you hoping to address through this contest?
Well, we are leaving that to our brilliant minds in the community, our youth. We want them to drive this conversation. We have intentionally left the topic vague because we want to hear directly from them on what issues they think we should be promoting and talking about and bringing awareness to. And so this is an opportunity to bring these brilliant minds to light and to showcase a pressing issue in our community that really needs attention.
You know, Heather, about 8 to 10 years ago, we created a campaign that was Flip the Script that was really centered on some activities that happened in our community around cyberbullying for middle schoolers. And in that program, we worked with middle schoolers to identify what is the best way to help them flip the script, to get out of cyberbullying, to get out of bullying altogether. And, you know, it's almost been a decade since we started that program. That program has since gone on to be now organized and facilitated by PBS. And we thought with our 50th anniversary, we're overdue to do something more for our community. And so it could be anything from talking about mental health and mental health awareness to food insecurity, to financial literacy, to preservation of the arts. But what I think the beauty of this challenge is that we're asking the youth to tell us what's important to them. What should we be talking about? What should we bring awareness to? What do we need to focus on? because no one knows better than they do at this time, right? And so that's why we're really looking for this set of high school kiddos, age 14 to 18, to really help us make sure that we're addressing what they need in order to succeed in their lives and moving forward and for the future.
Yeah, awesome. So Emma Rose, what impact do you hope that this contest and the resulting PSA will have not only on young people in Nevada, but also the audience who will hear or see the PSA?
Awareness is the number one thing, because I think when people are aware of what the challenges that our youth face, they're more likely to be not only empathetic, but give them resources to overcome those hurdles and those things. So while, you know, creating a campaign is our gift as an agency, that's in our wheelhouse, that's our skill set, that's our expertise, giving that to a nonprofit organization and helping them raise awareness for the work that they need to do in the community, I think that's the impact that we're trying to give back to our community.
What we are hoping to get out of this competition is to really lift the voices of our young generation. We have been so inspired by hearing from young adults about issues that come up left and right. And we thought, why not partner with our magnificent youth to help bring more attention to issues that are impacting them directly? And so we hope that this contest helps shine a light on something that needs a lot of attention.
Yeah, that's great. Now, after you produce the winner's idea into a media PSA, where will that PSA ultimately air?
So our intent is to get that PSA aired across all of our broadcast partners, and that's television partners, but then also our radio partners like Fantastic Odyssey that we're working with on this interview today, who also, I'm just going to throw that out there and give you guys a shout out, because Odyssey was imperative to the success of Flip the Script a couple years ago. So we'll work with our radio and television partners, but we also plan to put a little bit of paid funding behind it across the socials, because we know that that's where a lot of the media consumption is these days. That's where people are getting their ads. That's where people are engaging with advertisers and with brands. And so we think that it's important to have both the traditional types of media, out of home, print, radio, television, along with the social media and digital media. So we'll have a little bit of both. And it'll be across Meta, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, Snapchat, you name it. We're going to try to get it out there.
Okay, fantastic. Now, Nelson did give the website one time, but let's give it again where people can go for more information and to enter the contest. And when is the deadline that they have to do that by?
The website to visit is youngvisionaries.rrpartners.com. And the deadline is next week. It's on October 24th, and that's the Thursday, the 24th. So please, please, everyone, get online, check out the website. It's not that hard to apply. I'm sure there's plenty of your listeners for Odyssey that have ideas on how we can better our community, and we want to hear from them. We want to hear everyone's visions.
Okay. And that's a pretty tight deadline. But just to reiterate, they only need to submit their idea. They don't need to produce anything. They don't need to be too dramatic. Just submit a winning idea that will later be produced.
And that's right. And we will work with that person, the winner, to produce and bring their idea to fruition. That's right.
Fantastic. Okay. So once again, that website is youngvisionaries.rrpartners.com. youngvisionaries.rrpartners.com. The deadline to enter an idea for the Young Visionaries PSA contest is next Thursday, October 24th. All you need to have is an idea of some issue that you want to bring awareness to, an issue that's important to you, a topic that's important to you that you think other people should know about and pay attention to. So the contest is open to all Nevada youth age 14 to 18 years old. The deadline is Thursday, October 24th, and the website is youngvisionaries.rrpartners.com. And we've been speaking today with Nelson Araujo. He's the VP of Community Affairs and Partnerships at R&R Partners, and also Emma Rose Terry, Chair of the Employee Board for the R&R Foundation. And I really appreciate you both being here and sharing this fantastic contest that can bring awareness to an important issue in Nevada, as well as giving a young person an opportunity to have their idea created into something that makes a difference in the world. So thank you so much both for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, Heather.
Miles, you're not reaching your full potential. This is
unacceptable. Are you okay, son?
This is Kevin Love. I've partnered with The Spider Within, a Spider-Verse story to let you know that everyone's going through something, even superheroes.
Hey, Dad, you got a minute?
Visit kevinlovefund.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Jordan Sparks, multi-platinum singer and actress, and host of the new TV show Roller Jam, along with Roller Jam judges Johnny Weir, two-time U.S. Olympian and national figure skating champion, and Terrell Ferguson, roller skating legend known for his performances at Venice Beach. October is National Roller Skating Month, so it's a great time to talk about TV's first ever roller dancing competition and why roller skating is making a comeback. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Jordan, among all the competition reality shows, what's unique about your new show, Roller Jam?
I think the thing that's unique about this show is that there's never been a skating competition show like this ever. And so we're really the first ones to do it. We are the first ones to do it. And to be able to give skaters and crews across the country an ability to like be the best of the country is a really, really exciting thing. So I think people are going to be really entertained, thoroughly entertained. I think they're going to be educated because there's so much that we don't know about skating or have seen. And I also just think they're going to fall in love with these skaters and the crews and these guys because they're pretty cool too.
Yeah, of course. Now, one of the teams, Skate Gravity, is from Las Vegas.
Skate Gravity!
Where are some of the other competitors from?
Oh, they're from all over. LA, Atlanta, Utah,
Kansas City,
Texas, KC, barbecue sauce.
Yeah. And we have a few from California as well. So they're from all over.
Nice.
And I think that's the point of our show is that roller skating really is so all-American. It has touched everybody in different ways, of course. Some people go real competitive. Some people join a crew. Some people, like myself, roller skate in their basement when they dream about being a figure skater at the Olympic Games. but everyone has a story about roller skating, and that's what makes our show so special because we all think we know everything. And then you see the things that our skaters do, and it's just completely mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And speaking of that, Terrell, you've been roller skating a long time. Why do you think roller skating keeps trending again and again throughout the generations?
Because it's mental health. It's freedom. It's artistry. And really, the bottom line, we all did it when we were kids. It's fun. Like, it brings out your inner 8-year-old joy, and everybody needs to tap into that inner 8-year-old joy.
And we're talking old school quad roller skates, not even inline.
No, the real, I'm sorry, inline skaters, but I don't even consider those real skates. Quads are real skates, thank you. Whoa. You either roller skate or you ice skate. I don't know.
About fighting words.
Heelys and all of that stuff. Somebody tried to get me on heelys
once.
Hey,
I had heelys before.
No, okay. I'm not busting my butt.
All right, so speaking of ice skating, Johnny, how do your skills in the figure skating world translate into your role as a roller dancing judge?
Well, the thing is, I'm not a very gifted roller skater. The way that you balance on a roller skate is very different than on a figure skating blade. Also, we've got the friction of a stainless steel blade against the ice. You kind of melt into it a little bit. You really feel like you're one with the ice. These rollers are heavy and you're on top of a wooden floor. So for me personally, it's very different. However, as a judge, my experience as a global performer and performing at the highest heights of athletics and sport at the Olympic Games, performing for sold out 75,000 person arenas, all of those things lend themselves to me being a wonderful judge and being able to give a lot of advice and information to our skaters about performing to the rafters, about being bigger and bolder and better than you've ever had to be. And our show celebrates so much individuality. But some of these teams, you know, they only skate at their local rink. They skate between one another and never really go big. But for $150,000 and $10,000 for their rink, you got to go big and go home. And that's my position on the panel. Terrell's sassy pants when it comes to the technique, but my position was just one of like, mama bear, just love and support and be the best version of yourself you can be.
Yeah, but it's like shooting a free throw in your backyard versus shooting a free throw game 7 of the NBA finals. There's levels to this. There's different levels. So you need someone to push, prod, and guide you and get you past it. Because if you want 150K, you got to bring it. You got to go beyond what you thought you could go beyond. So, yes, you give them encouragement. And Miss Compassion here is the shoulder they can all cry on.
Yeah, so we make a pretty good team up here. They're saying the same thing. It just is in a different package.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to decipher that. It's like, wait a second, Johnny, you're not looking at the skill set. I think you are, right?
Well, there are so many different disciplines in roller skating. I think that's something that a lot of people forget about. I mean, there is that classic crew kind of break dancing. There's couple skating, there's teams, there's crews. There are skaters on rollers who do what we do on the ice. So our show runs the full gamut and celebrates each and every one of those, but I can't speak to like battles and like the crazy legs. And we have different names for everything. So it's like speaking English and Spanish at times when it comes to the names for the technique in roller skating. But definitely my position is more about the overall appearance, aesthetic, being a strong performer. Terrell, you know, had the same idea and the same focuses there with performance. Got really nitty gritty on the technique. And our guest judges actually had a lot of sway with the results, because no matter what, we do speak a little bit of a different language, Terrell and I, but we ultimately would have very similar results, and then the guest judges would just throw, they would upset the apple cart, so to speak. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So October is National Roller Skating Month. So what are some fun things that families or couples or friends can do together this month to celebrate?
Watch our show. Please watch our show. If you feel so inclined, dust off those skates and go, but be safe and, you know, get your pads and helmet and all those things. Look up some skaters on TikTok. You can go on a roller skating date. Bring your kids. There are so many different things. You can rewatch the Super Bowl, Usher at the Super Bowl. Like, there's so many things you can watch. And then you said something.
After you watch our show.
Right.
Go to your local rinks. Everybody across America, support your local rinks. Rinks in America are disappearing, and they used to be like a place of family fun and togetherness, grandma and grandkids. So just like our show, grandma and grandkids can watch together in the rinks, grandma and grandkids can skate together.
And after you stream Roller Jam on Max or watch it on Magnolia 8/7 Central starting on the 12th of October, you're going to learn a whole lot that you never knew about roller skating. And I, you know, just from my own experience of watching sports on television, getting inspired and going and trying it, I think a lot of people will be heading over to the rink. And I'll say, as somebody, you know, I may be a little bit long in the tooth at this point, but I still go skate all the time for exercise. Think about giving up a day at the gym for a day at the rink.
Do not attempt what those kids do on our show, though. Start slow.
See, that's what I was going to ask, because when I was a kid and we went roller skating at the roller rink, it was circles, you know, you would learn to kind of cross over as you do the turn. But you guys can do some pretty impressive tricks. So how much should we try right out of the gate?
No back.
None of it.
Yeah, no back.
Start off with your forward, backwards, and crossovers. Jordan, what are we working? What was the number one thing we say?
Marshmallow knees.
Yeah,
bend the knees.
Bend
your knees.
Make sure your knees are bent. But I think if it inspires you to want to get to that level, you definitely have to crawl before you flip, right?
Yes.
You gotta crawl before you flip.
But
you gotta find people locally, which you'll most likely find either, you know, on the beach in Venice, if you're in California, or if you go to your local rink, somebody who can help guide you. I think that's also really important, too.
And there are definitely coaches for roller skating all across the country.
Yep.
And also communities in every single one of these rinks, which is why we love being a part of this show, because we hope that people will be more and more interested in roller skating, keep those doors open.
We got our fearless host out there, too. You put on some skates.
I did. I put on some skates the other day. It was the first time since I was younger, but I stood up and how many laps did we do? Maybe
we did
three
at least,
or four?
No, we did like five or six
we
laps.
We did a couple of laps and it felt really good. So I'm excited. My son is 6 years old, so I think I'm going to get him some skates for Christmas, and I'll be right out there learning from the ground up again.
And you didn't fall.
I didn't.
That's awesome. Okay, so one more time. Where can we go to learn more about Roller Jam or watch it when it's streaming on Max?
HBO Max and?
And Magnolia Network at 8, 7 Central.
Yes, but stream now on Max.
Mm-hmm. All right, awesome. And once again, you can get the information for Max at max.com. Super simple, max.com. The new show is called Roller Jam, hosted by Jordan Sparks, two of the judges, Johnny Weir and Terrell Ferguson, and of course, guest judges every week as well. We've been speaking today with Jordan Sparks. She's a multi-platinum singer and actress, host of the new show Roller Jam. Roller Jam judges Johnny Weir, two-time U.S. Olympian and national figure skating champion, and Terrell Ferguson, roller skating legend. Thank you all so much for being here. It's been so much fun talking to you and learning about your new show and also what people can do to take advantage of National Roller Skating Month. Thanks so much for your time.
Yes, thank you so much, Heather.
We love you, Vegas.
Lace up those skates.
Attention high school sports fans, are you an armchair official? You know, the parent or fan who constantly yells at the referees and loves to let everyone know just how bad you think they are. Well, if you think you could do better, then get in the game and prove it. It's time for you to suit up and make the calls where they actually count. Every sport in Nevada needs more officials. Sign up today at highschoolofficials.com.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Morag Mackay, Chief Research and Network Officer for Safe Kids Worldwide. A new survey shows that most parents move their kids out of booster seats too soon, which can put their children at risk. Morag, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
So what exactly is Safe Kids Worldwide?
Safe Kids Worldwide is a not-for-profit here in the U.S. that works to prevent unintentional injury to children. So that's the sorts of things that parents often call accidents, but really they are very much preventable. So we work to prevent drownings, to prevent burns, to prevent poisonings, and of course, one of the big ones, because it's the leading cause of unintentional injury, death in children, car crashes, the results of car crashes.
Yeah, that's absolutely important. Now, what does your recent report reveal about booster seat safety?
So this was a study where we had done something similar 10 years ago, and we were really looking to see if we had seen any progress. So we partnered with some researchers at Ohio State University, and with funding from Chevrolet, we were able to talk to just over 3,000 caregivers of children between the ages of 4 and 10. And, you know, we had some good news in there, but we also had some things where there's still work to be done. The good news was that in the 10 intervening years, we saw that parents were keeping their children longer in forward-facing seats and in booster seats. But when we looked at when they were transferring their child into those booster seats, 4 out of 5 parents told us that they were moving their child into a booster seat before that child was big enough, so before we would recommend them to do it.
Okay, so they're moving them into a booster seat too early. What about moving them out of the booster seat completely?
Yeah, similarly, parents seem to be sometimes in a rush to move children to the next stage. And the challenge with moving a child from a booster seat to a seatbelt alone is that very often the child does not fit that adult seat with the seatbelt attached. So what that does is it puts them at risk in the event of a crash. So if you've got a small child and they're sitting without a booster seat, often what will happen is they will slouch down in the seat so that they can bend their knees over the edge of the vehicle seat and get comfortable. And when they do that slouch, the lap belt of the seatbelt will ride up from where it should be riding, which is over their hips and their pelvis. It'll ride up to their abdomen. And in the event of a crash, what that means is that rather than having, you know, bones protecting and absorbing any of the force that comes in the event of a crash, that's going to be happening in the abdomen where you've got all sorts of organs that can be really damaged. The other thing we see when a child doesn't correctly fit in an adult seatbelt is that the shoulder belt will start to dig into their neck. So ideally, you'll see it between the shoulder and the neck. But when they're too small, it will dig into their neck. And so what they end up doing is tucking it behind their shoulder. And what that essentially means is they are no longer being held back in the event of a crash. So then we can see severe head injuries and even spinal cord injuries because they can essentially clamshell over that lap belt if their upper torso is not being held against the seat.
Mm, okay. So we can see some negative repercussions of moving a child in or out of a booster seat too early, but what are the criteria so we can know in advance when it's time to move a child from a baby seat to a booster seat and from a booster seat to just the regular adult seat?
Yeah. So if we're talking about a forward-facing seat with a harness, most of them will have a weight and height limit associated with them. And so when you move to the booster seat, the biggest thing is that the booster seat is held into the car by the seatbelt alone. And so sometimes children will undo the seatbelt and get loose in the vehicle where it's much harder for them to undo a harness seat. So we really recommend that children do not move into a booster seat until they are at the max restrictions that that particular seat that their parent has purchased is reached. In terms of moving from a booster seat to a seatbelt alone, the magic number to start thinking about it is when they reach the height of 4 feet 9 inches. So at that point in time, you can start to assess whether they'll fit the seatbelt and in the vehicle alone without a booster seat. And for that, we have a seatbelt test. And it really builds some of the things that I was previously talking about. Seat your child in that adult seat, like in the regular vehicle seat, with their back against the vehicle seat and their hips against the vehicle seat, and see where their knees are. If their knees can happily bend over that seat without them slouching, that's the first step. They're probably okay at that point. And then you want to make sure that that lap belt is low on the hips and upper thighs and isn't up above on their abdomen. And then you check the shoulder belt. And as I said, what you want to see is if they're fitting that seat belt correctly, is that it's riding between their shoulder and their neck. If it's digging into their neck, they're probably not ready for a seatbelt alone seating situation. And so again, you want to keep them in a booster seat for a little longer.
Okay. So we can control the conditions when it's our child and our car, but what did your new report reveal about carpooling?
Yeah, so we ask parents about carpooling because it is becoming more and more common with respect to driving kids to school or to school events and that sort of thing. And what we found was that 30% of the caregivers that we talked to who do carpool admitted that they do not always follow the rules in terms of letting children ride without seatbelts or without a car seat or a booster seat that that particular child would normally use. Some of that is related to challenges in moving seats and booster seats between cars, but some of it's also the challenge that you can't get five or, you know, as many seats into a vehicle as you would like to get. So sometimes they take a chance and they don't have children properly restrained. So we really say it's so important that you buckle up every ride, every time, and in the right seat for every child.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so where can listeners find out more information about child safety, including proper use of car seats and booster seats?
If you go to Safe Kids website, it's safekids.org, safekids.org. You can search there on booster seat tips or just car seat safety, and you will find all sorts of information that will help you both learn more about what you should be doing, but also help you find car seat events or inspection stations in your area of the woods where you can go and speak to a certified child passenger safety technician who has even more information to help teach you how to correctly install seats and correctly get your child into that car seat and keep them safe.
All right, fantastic. So once again, that website, safekids.org, safekids.org, that's the website for Safe Kids Worldwide. You can find out all kinds of safety tips for our children, whether that's poison control, you know, all kinds of safety precautions. But specifically, we're talking today about car seats and booster seats because car crashes are the number one cause of death for kids. So it's really important to have those car seats and those booster seats properly used. And you can find out all that information once again, safekids.org. And we've been speaking with Morag Mackay. She's the Chief Research and Network Officer for Safe Kids Worldwide. And Morag, it's been great talking to you and finding out these tips from you, very succinctly put, easy to remember. But of course, you know, when reality kicks in, it's not always easy to know exactly when to do what. So you've definitely provided a lot of fantastic information today. And I want to thank you for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Jonathan Villena, thoracic surgeon at the Cornell Medical Center, and Lisa Goldman, a lung cancer patient diagnosed 10 years ago who has never been a smoker. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Dr. Villena, how common is lung cancer in the U.S.?
Well, currently it's the number one killer, and it's the most common cancer in the U.S. for both men and women.
Okay. And why is lung cancer so deadly?
It's due to its aggressive nature. You know, I'm a surgeon. I see patients in the early stages where the lung cancer can be removed. And even those patients, about half of them will have a recurrence, meaning that the cancer comes back after surgery. So it's really the aggressive biology of this cancer.
Okay. Now, how do non-smokers like Lisa get lung cancer?
So this is relatively new, especially research-wise. You know, we didn't know this. In the past, we used to blame it on secondhand smoking. But now there is distinct patients that have never been exposed to cigarettes that get lung cancer. It's about 15% of them. A lot of it, we think, has to do with external exposure to things such as radon, or sometimes it's genetic.
Okay. Lisa, could you please share your story with lung cancer?
Sure. So I'm very fortunate to share that I was diagnosed over a decade ago with stage 4 lung cancer. At the time, I had just turned 41 years old. I was a fitness instructor and a longtime vegetarian. So I was living a very healthy lifestyle and had no exposure to smoking. But I quickly learned that all you need are lungs to get lung cancer.
Dr. Villena, what new types of therapy are available for treating lung cancer?
So I think the great news is that in the last 5 years, lung cancer treatment has really changed completely. That's what we call a paradigm shift in the treatment of a cancer. For now, you know, what we've recently approved are things such as immunotherapy, targeted therapy to a specific mutation, and other therapies or combination of therapies for cancer such as Lisa has.
What types of therapies are those?
So targeted therapies, meaning that lung cancers have very different mutational analysis. So what we realize is that certain cancers, such as EGFR, ALK or ALK, and ROS1, these are just three different types of lung cancer, and each one of them can be treated with a specific drug, something we call targeted therapy.
And what's adjuvant therapy?
So adjuvant therapy, just like as I was mentioning earlier, you know, I can go and do perfect surgery and remove all the cancer. But the sad fact is that around half the patients will have a recurrence within 2 years, meaning that the cancer comes back. So adjuvant therapy means that in addition to surgery, we give it another therapy, and that prevents the cancer from coming back and prolongs the life of the patient.
So you're combining surgery with medication.
Exactly right.
Okay. Lisa, was that type of therapy an option when you were diagnosed 10 years ago?
It was not an option 10 years ago, but there's been so many improvements and developments thanks to research over the last 10 years. So today I might very well have the opportunity to have adjuvant therapy.
If you did have the opportunity, knowing what you know now, would you consider adjuvant therapy?
Definitely. There's so many new treatments out there that I would be interested in. And of course, I would speak with my doctor about what would be suitable for my particular case, but very interested in therapies like adjuvant therapy.
Okay. Dr. Villena, who should talk to their doctor about adjuvant therapy?
So we've made such progress in lung cancer that now we treat almost every single stage of lung cancer with some sort of adjunct therapy or adjuvant therapy. So basically, anybody with a diagnosis of lung cancer should be speaking to their doctor about this.
Okay. Now, how do new therapies like these get tested and approved ultimately, hopefully?
So it's a long process, but the majority of it starts with research. Research moves on to something we call a clinical trial. That clinical trial then goes on to these larger, more national clinical trials until they actually get FDA approved. So all of this starts with research and clinical trials.
Okay. Lisa, is a clinical trial something you would consider in your situation if available?
Absolutely, I'd consider a clinical trial. Basically, clinical trials are tomorrow's medicine available today. So I know that a lot of people that aren't in the cancer space are a little hesitant about clinical trials, afraid to be a lab rat or get something suboptimal. But in my experience, I've seen hundreds of patients have their life extended by years thanks to getting access to new cutting-edge medications through clinical trials. So I will definitely keep my eye on that as an option going forward.
Awesome. So, Dr. Villena, where can listeners go if they want more information about lung cancer and new treatment options that may be available?
So we have an amazing website, lcfamerica.org, where it actually can navigate you through a lot of these things, such as clinical trials and new and upcoming treatments.
Okay, awesome. So once again, that website, lcfamerica.org, that's the Lung Cancer Foundation of America, lcfamerica.org. Plenty of information there about lung cancer, including new treatment options that may be available and research that's being done, lcfamerica.org. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Jonathan Villena. He's a thoracic surgeon at the Cornell Medical Center, and also Lisa Goldman, who was diagnosed with lung cancer 10 years ago and has never been a smoker. And I'd like to thank you both for being here today, Dr. Villena, for bringing us up-to-date information about what the future of lung cancer treatment might look like, and Lisa, for sharing your personal story and your journey with us. So thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
My name is Juanita Segura. I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer for about 8 years now. Biomarker testing was a turning point for me. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Jen Jones, VP of Government Affairs for AARP. The Social Security Cost of Living Adjustments, or COLA, have just been announced, but what does that mean for the millions of people receiving Social Security benefits? Jen, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
So what exactly are the Social Security Cost of Living Adjustments?
So every year, the Social Security Administration announces its annual cost of living adjustment increase. Yesterday, it announced an increase of 2.5% for 2025. And what that means is it allows Social Security beneficiaries to retain the full value of their earned benefit despite rising costs. That's what it's designed to do.
Okay. Now, on a day-to-day basis, how will this affect people who are receiving Social Security benefits?
Yeah, so starting in January of next year, the average increase to a Social Security check will be $47 or $48. So everyone will see that increase starting in January of 2025.
Nice. Okay. Now, how many people is that in Nevada who receive Social Security benefits?
So there are more than 565,000 Nevadans receiving Social Security. And we know that Social Security lifts 129,000 people in Nevada out of poverty. So it is incredibly important and serves as the retirement bedrock for thousands of people in the state.
Yeah, definitely. Now, how can people go about navigating customer service issues or just trying to figure out where to go for what they need with the Social Security Administration?
Yeah, so the Social Security Administration has struggled with customer service for quite some time. It's largely due to underfunding. Their budget's been cut 17% in the last 10 years, but they're serving more people, 22% more. And so we encourage people, if they are trying to contact SSA, though things are getting a little bit better with the 1-800 number, to actually visit SSA online. Go to ssa.gov, and you can go to ssa.gov My Benefits to get specific information about your Social Security benefits. I would also say if you're looking for more sort of general resources and tools related to Social Security, aarp.org/Social Security is a wonderful resource.
Nice. Okay. Now, what are some tips for retirement planning?
So, you know, we get this question all the time. When should I start collecting Social Security? What's the best time? You can collect Social Security as early as 62, but full retirement age for maximum benefits don't start until 67. And so we urge people to sort of ask themselves very specific questions like, have I saved enough for the kind of life I want to lead once I'm in retirement? How much debt am I carrying? Am I physically healthy? And, you know, answering those questions is pretty personal, but I would say they're essential to decide sort of exactly when you should start collecting. You know, we urge people to wait as long as you can because that obviously maximizes the benefit, but we also understand that not everyone can wait.
Yeah. And when should people start planning? Is it ever too early?
It is never too early. Never, never, never too early. I mean, AARP has done a lot of work around ensuring that people can start saving for retirement as early as possible, right? So, you know, we talk about the 50 plus, but honestly, we encourage people to start thinking about saving for later in life much earlier than that, you know, 20s, 30s. Start thinking about sort of the life that you want to have, your post-work life, right? Once you're retiring. Like, so start thinking about building that nest egg now, because we know that Social Security was never meant to be the only source of retirement income. But we also know that, you know, 40% of older Americans rely on Social Security as their primary source of income in retirement.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so you did give a couple of websites, but let's give them again. And where can people go to learn more about the new Social Security Cost of Living Adjustments, or COLA?
Yeah, so, you know, you can start with AARP. So AARP.org/Social Security will provide information both about the COLA as well as tools and resources for planning. But if you're looking for specific information about you and your benefits, I encourage people to go to ssa.gov/mybenefits.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, those websites, aarp.org/Social Security, will give you plenty of information about the new cost of living adjustments from the Social Security Administration, as well as tools that you can navigate. Lots of research and information there, aarp.org/Social Security. And then if you want information about your specific case, ssa.gov/mybenefits. That's the Social Security Administration. ssa.gov/mybenefits will let you look at your account and your situation. And we've been speaking today with Jen Jones. She's the VP of Government Affairs for AARP. And Jen, I want to thank you so much for being here. This is important information that you're letting people know about so that they can navigate the new cost of living adjustments and also any customer service issues that they might have with the Social Security Administration. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hearing loss affects about 48 million adults, including 50% of people 75 years or older. Consistent exposure to loud sounds and exposure to a single loud sound can contribute to hearing loss, which if left untreated may increase the risk of health conditions such as dementia. It's important to avoid noisy places, limit the use of earbuds, and wear earplugs if exposure to loud sounds is unavoidable. Eat a healthy diet to provide your ears with nutrients. Get tested and use hearing aids if needed. This has been a message from United Healthcare Hearing, Wish of a Lifetime, from AARP and this station. Learn more at wishofalifetime.com.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is mathematician Dr. Kumar Murthy, professor at the University of Toronto, director of the Fields Institute, and author of the new book, The Science of Human Possibilities. Dr. Murthy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So what inspired you to write your new book, The Science of Human Possibilities?
Well, I think there is a lot one experiences. I've been in the university for several decades, and one sees students of all levels of achievement and development, from beginning undergraduates to those who are finishing their PhD and beyond. And in all of these, one finds people struggling to master a certain subject, discover something about themselves, and guide their lives. And so I felt there were some things that could be said that could make that process a lot smoother and simpler. And those principles are actually relevant, I believe, even outside the academic environment, and could be of benefit to the general public.
What are some of those principles?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand that we have within us lots of potential, that large part of it is undiscovered. And we live in a world where we can define what we mean by success. And what we mean by achievement, what we mean by fulfillment, what we mean by living a purposeful life. And we have to give ourselves the freedom to explore from this point of view. And all the tools that we have, whether it's the university or other learning environments, the technology that's available to us, are just that. They're just tools to enable us to reach these broader goals for ourselves. I think that's the first thing to understand. And then there are lots of more details about the way the science has helped us to give a certain perspective on things that will encourage us. And then the disciplines that we can undertake ourselves that will make it more likely that we will reach our goals.
Okay. What are the biggest misconceptions around talent and our potential to succeed?
The biggest misconception is this, that if it's something really important and something worth doing, I probably can't do it. I find this a lot. You know, in students, I find this at the PhD level, the main criterion for finishing a PhD is that the student has to discover something new, something that is new enough that it can be published in a peer-reviewed journal. And this is where I find most students stumble, because they have the feeling that, look, if it were something new and it was discoverable, somebody else would have done it. Me, I can't do this. And so one spends a lot of time helping people to come to grips with the idea. In fact, you do have something to contribute. And so you have to give a lot of examples of that. In my classes, I tend to use the Kung Fu Panda movie as an example. I really like the way that, you know, he thinks that he can't do it, but he wants to do it, but he thinks he can't do it until the right combination of circumstances gets him to realize, in fact, he can do it, and he can do it in his own way, not in way the traditional wisdom might dictate. You know, the entire community might be thinking that here's a big problem. Yes, we want it solved, but this is the way to solve it. But maybe it may not be the way to solve it. Maybe there's another approach. Maybe that will be more fruitful. And we've seen this time and again. There are many examples in science I can give where that's happened. And we have to understand it's not only in science, in life also. Conventional wisdom only goes so far, and you have to give yourself the opportunity to think a little differently. So I would say that's the biggest misconception that has to be overcome, that I don't have something to contribute and that I have to go along the path that others have said is the way that will likely lead to the solution. I have to get beyond both of those.
Okay. So then besides just, you know, believing like the little engine that could, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. What's the best way to tap into our full potential and to learn new things along the way?
Okay, so the first thing is to understand that science itself is telling us, especially neuroscience is telling us, that this is not wishful thinking. You know, this is not a dream that is not founded on reality. It's telling us that we have the most powerful tool you could imagine to do anything we want to do, and namely, that's our brain. Moreover, our brain is not a static entity, but a dynamic one. So the capacity of the brain is largely untapped for most of us. And moreover, the way the brain functions, neuroscience tells us, it has something called a property of plasticity or neuroplasticity, which means it responds with more capacity according to the demand that's put on it. So the essential thing is to really want to do something, to master something, to get good at something. And the brain starts rewiring itself so that it can satisfy that need. That's not wishful thinking. That's what neuroscience tells us. So the first thing is to get that kind of conviction that I'm not just aiming for empty air or trying to catch air. This is real. And then to understand that, how does that change happen? How does the brain rewire itself? And how do we accelerate that? Well, that's the whole process of discipline, really, self-discipline, and understanding the other kinds of supports that we have in our life. You see, we're not islands. We're not doing this on our own. We're part of a community. We're part of a tradition. We're part of a culture. We have a certain identity. All of those things can be helpful steps along the way in realizing our goals.
Okay. Now, you mentioned self-discipline a couple of times. Why is that important?
So self-discipline is, discipline in general, is the art of systematically fashioning raw material into the form that you want it to be in. So that's what a potter does. You take clay, which is unformed, and with the discipline of their hands, they give it an artistic shape, and that becomes a work of art. We are similarly the clay that we ourselves have to fashion, and we're trying to create a work of art out of ourselves. So discipline is exactly that deliberate process by which it can be done. And within discipline, we have to discover, by the way, it's interesting to compare this word discipline. I know in a lot of people evokes a lot of negative ideas, something that's forced on us. This is self-discipline. It's something I do because I want to do. It's sort of like an athlete who's training for the Olympics. Nobody needs to force them to get out of bed and onto the track or onto the gym. Their passion, their desire for the goal they're striving for gets them out there and do the exercises they need to do. That's self-discipline. So in Sanskrit, the word discipline is called tapas. And tapas literally, if you translate it into English, it means to heat. And this is the whole point. You have to warm up to something before you can throw yourself into it. The motivation from within comes gradually. And so a lot of the effort has to be in preparing our mind so that we warm up to an idea or warm up to a goal or a path, and then we will do what we need to do. So, but that discipline is extremely important, I believe.
Yeah, okay. And how does the metaphor of light apply to human lives?
Ah, that's a beautiful metaphor. You see, we use it so often, even in our ordinary language. We say, you know, so-and-so is very bright, you know, which means that they're intelligent. So we have this idea of associating light with some higher state of mind, some intelligence, and even beyond intelligence, to love and compassion, a spiritual presence. So that's an idea that we can use. We do use it, but we can use it more knowingly. Light is easy to focus the mind on. You see, if you're trying to, if I can use the word, psych yourself up to doing something, to getting into something, the idea of light is very easy to focus your mind on. And if you think of yourself or your goal in those kind of luminous terms, that's a very attractive kind of metaphor by which you can focus your mind. And you need many of these. This is just one, but you need many of these so that you keep going for as long as you need to reach your goal. So it's a metaphor and a very powerful metaphor.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so where can people find out more or get a copy of your new book, The Science of Human Possibilities?
The book, I believe, is available on Amazon. It's published by Sutherland House Experts, and they can be reached as well at their website. So those are the two places. I would say try Amazon and other booksellers as well, and Sutherland House Experts.
All right. So the new book, The Science of Human Possibilities, is available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, wherever you like to buy your books. It's called The Science of Human Possibilities by Dr. Kumar Murthy. And of course, we've been speaking today with Dr. Kumar Murthy. He's a mathematician. He's a professor at the University of Toronto, director of the Fields Institute, and of course, author of the new book we've been talking about, The Science of Human Possibilities. Now, this is a topic that obviously very important and also very complicated. And it's a great book to kind of let you dive into those possibilities of success and possibilities of achievement. So Dr. Murthy, I want to thank you so much for being here, sharing with us these concepts, these strategies, these tips, and the thoughts in your book, The Science of Human Possibilities. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Heather. It was a great, real privilege talking to you. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Kevin, President of the Dementia Society of America. Request our free guide. It includes information on brain health checkups and much more. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Your brain will thank you.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, October 21st at 8 p.m. benefiting the Human Rights Campaign, and Monday, November 4th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Bonnie Fang Foundation. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Candlelighters Childhood Cancer Foundation of Nevada is looking for sponsors and volunteers to make their 26th annual Halloween Bash a success. The event for pediatric cancer patients and their families is happening next Thursday, October 24th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at Cowabunga Bay Water Park in Henderson. Register to volunteer, be a sponsor, or make a donation at candlelightersnv.org. That's candlelightersnv.org. R&R Foundation, the charitable arm of R&R Partners, is inviting Nevada youth to submit nonprofit public service announcement ideas to their Young Visionaries PSA contest, with the chance to see winning entries get professionally produced. The contest is open to Nevada students aged 14 to 18, and the deadline to submit ideas is next Thursday, October 24th. Find out all the details or enter the contest at youngvisionaries.rrpartners.com. That's youngvisionaries.rrpartners.com. Project Fabulous is holding their Purple Power Stronger Together event to celebrate survivors of domestic violence next Friday, October 25th from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Ahern Hotel in Las Vegas. This Domestic Violence Awareness Month event features speakers and a Purple Power Walk, uniting all genders in the fight against domestic violence. For more information, call 702-881-8702. That's 702-881-8702. Dazzle Africa is holding their third annual Imagine Gala next Saturday, October 26th at 6 p.m. at Treasure Island. Funds raised will support anti-poaching initiatives, clean water, and education for the rural communities of Zambia. Get your tickets or find out more at dazzleafrica.org. That's dazzleafrica.org. And the Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY, is hosting the 8th Annual Nevada Youth Homelessness Summit on Friday, November 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Las Vegas City Hall. Help build the movement to end youth homelessness across Nevada. You can get the details or register to attend at nphy.org/summit24. That's nphy.org/summit24.